versus Diane Hess.
Morning.
Good morning, ma'am. Are you Miss Hess?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there anybody here on behalf of another party, Mr. Kozlovic, for example?
No, Your Honor, it's the inmate of the Department of Corrections.
Okay. It's all coming back to me now. So you may proceed.
You may have seen the court. My name is Carrie Fitz. I'm the deputy Buffalo County attorney. And in this case, I represent the state of Nebraska, which is an intervener in the child medical support enforcement portion of the case that's in front of you today. The case comes in front of you today on a petition for further review from the Court of Appeals, dismissal of Mr. Holding's appeal for lack of jurisdiction. This case came to the Court of Appeals after the trial court addressed part of a garnishment proceeding, and the Court of Appeals found that there was no final appealable order, therefore the Court of Appeals lacked jurisdiction to hear Mr. Holding's appeal. At the trial court stage, this matter proceeded on garnishment on and about, at that time, 4.5-year-old judgment. The district court had issued the request of the state of Nebraska garnishment interrogatories to the Department of Corrections to see whether the Department of Corrections held any garnishable funds of Mr. Erbling. The garnishment summons were issued on December 14th. Mr. Erbling received a copy of the notice to judgment debtor, which sets forth the technical right for a judgment debtor to request hearing on a few separate grounds. In his case, he checked the box indicating he believed he did not know the full amount of the judgment. The matter proceeded to hearing at Mr. Erbling's request on January 5th. And it's important for this court to note, and I think it was important for the Court of Appeals to note, that at this time the garnishee, the Department of Corrections, had not returned the garnishee interrogatories, so this matter had not proceeded to any sort of completed garnishment. At the time the court had the hearing, nobody really knew whether anything or what amount was at controversy. The Department of Corrections, about a week and a half after this, the court's order from which Mr. Erbling appeals, returned interrogatory finding he had 7 cents in his inmate account.
What does that mean in this case?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing, Your Honor. And in this case, I think that's why the Court of Appeals properly determined there was no final appealable order. Final appealable order is fairly well defined both by statute and by your jurisprudence, as it has to affect a substantial right in one of a few different types of proceedings. In this case, nothing happened. There is, you know, I think the best evidence that there is no final appealable order is that neither party has any legally cognizable interest in the outcome of the success of Mr. Erbling's appeal. He wins this appeal, his 7 cents are his. He loses this appeal, 7 cents are his. Because there is nothing, because this never proceeded to an actual final order. This never proceeded to garnishment. And because there was no substantial right affected, this appeal was premature, and the Court of Appeals' decision to dismiss it for lack of jurisdiction should be upheld in this case.
Have we ever spoken to whether an order entered pursuant to the hearing under Section 25-1011 is or is not a final order?
No, Your Honor, you haven't issued an opinion specifically to that statute, that component of the statute. But I think the Court of Appeals, in its ruling, cites a case in Henry Harrow King, which pretty well defines that a substantial right has to be more than your technical right. In this case, that right to a hearing, which is where this appeal comes from, is a technical right. It's not a substantial right. It has to be one that cannot be vindicated upon entry of a final order. In this case, the appropriate time to appeal a garnishment is when a garnishment happens. In this case, the garnishment has not, did not, and I would presume never will, occur as to the money that's at controversy in this case. So the right of Mr. Erbling to issue his appeal didn't attach it. It would have attached had the state proceeded to a garnishment, had he sought to have that garnishment quashed.
He was in the case of the judgment debtor, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. He was the plaintiff in the original trial court action, but the judgment of child medical support was entered against him as the non-custodial parent.
It's perfectly possible that the answers to interrogatories could have been returned prior to the time of this hearing, right?
Yes, Your Honor. By statute, the Department of Corrections should have returned the interrogatories by December 24th. They were about 3 weeks late in returning those interrogatories.
So, does the fact that it's sort of fortuitous that the interrogatories weren't returned until after the hearing, does that really
Your Honor, your analysis, I believe, should focus on whether or not we have a final appealable order, which could be a garnishment order in this case. It's my position that in this case, the decision that the district or county court or trial court makes at this interlocutory stage, this request for hearing, when they determine whether or not funds are exempt, household status qualifies, or perhaps a person has partially or fully satisfied a judgment, that's just one step in many in the process of a garnishment. I would say it's more analogous to a trial based evidentiary ruling. You know, for example, if it's for a discovery interrogatory, I might not like the answer, but it's not necessarily enough for me to come to the final order.
What did you say? It doesn't sense on his books.
Yes.
Does it matter? The size of his account?
As to whether or not his case is premature, I don't think it does. Whether it's $0 or $1 million, it didn't proceed to garnishment. And the fact that it did not proceed to an actual garnishment order is what makes it not a final appeal order. He has, you know, again, there's no legally cognizable interest in this particular case because no final order was ever sought.
Maybe you've already answered this, but I think you earlier said that the right to a hearing isn't technically right. Why do you say that, and what is your authority for that?
Your Honor, in this case, the right to a hearing is triggered by the court's issuance of the notice of judgment debtor to court form that specifically states that they have the right, I think it's to bring that facts in front of the judge, to bring the facts in front of the judge that perhaps the account sought to be garnished holds funds of the
exempt. Why do you call that technical?
Because if that's the point in time in this proceeding in which that judgment debtor has the first opportunity to bring this particular factual issue in front of the court. It's not necessarily dispositive of the matter, and because it's not dispositive, it's a mere technical right. It's a process right there that they have to ask for the hearing to bring that evidence forward.
If the result of the hearing was an order determining that all of the funds sought to be garnished were indeed exempt, wouldn't that affect a substantial right of the judgment creditor?
Not unless the funds were still sought to be garnished. In this case, you know, in any garnishment proceeding, we're kind of at an intermediate stage, similar to if a motion to eliminate is granted by a trial court in a criminal case. It can be dispositive. It can start to tip the hands as to who may or may not prevail at the final order. But in the case where no actual garnishment was executed, no right was actually impacted, the interest in that 7 cents remains as unimpacted today as it was prior to the request for hearing or at the time of hearing.
And what I think I heard you say earlier is that there's never likely to be a final order in this case. Is that right?
Your Honor, I think at the, you know, I can speak that we made the decision 7 cents was not worth proceeding to a final garnishment order, but we chose to treat it just as if the garnishee had returned the interrogatory saying they held $0 in funds.
But 7 cents is still 7 cents, and from the property owner's perspective, it's their property until the court deprives them of it. But if we treat this as interlocutory, when does it become final? Is it either when there's an order saying pay over the 7 cents, or the judgment creditor abandons the garnishment?
Your Honor,
those would be the triggering circumstances.
Yes, I believe at the point in time the individual tends to be deprived, at the time an order to deliver the funds is sought, which would, in that case, determine whether he's liable, to what extent. For example, if we sought $1 million, he only owed, or the Department of Corrections said he had $1 million and he only owed $5,000. The district court in this case had to make a bunch of additional findings before that right was impacted. Who the money goes to, when it goes to, whether or not it goes there. And because this, and I think that's defined in the garnishment statutes themselves. All of the garnishment statutes themselves say upon further order, fairly repetitively throughout the statute, which clearly defines that at this stage nothing has happened except some new facts that have brought in front of the court. The final order happens at the point in time that somebody asked the court to do something with that property.
Has your client abandoned the garnishment proceeding?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is the case moot?
That would be the same position. Nobody retains a legally cognizable interest in the outcome of this case. I think that's been the position since the time this appeal was docketed. We sought a summary affirmance at the Court of Appeals stage. I think the Court of Appeals ruling there by finding a lack of jurisdiction bases on the fact that there is no final appealable order because there is no, there's nothing that remains a controversy in this case.
Our record, however, does not show the abandonment, correct?
No.
And you haven't filed an affidavit in this court to establish mootness.
No, Your
Honor. I guess you're telling us today that it's moot.
Yes, Your Honor. And, you know, from the beginning, we've defended this suit as not being a final appealable order, so that, you know, whether the order in order and an issue is moot is kind of a chicken and egg sort of argument there. We don't believe there is anything at controversy in this case to be moot or not.
Assuming it is moot, is there still some public interest in deciding the question of whether a 25-10-11 unsuccessful challenge is a final appealable order?
Your Honor, it'd be my position that this court already has made that decision in its extensive jurisprudence about final appealable orders.
We've said it with respect to 25.
Not with respect to the statute, but generally the court's findings that a substantial right has to be impacted upon one of the statutory final appealable orders.
You're suggesting that all those judgment debtors out there who request these hearings wouldn't find some help in knowing that if they lose, it's too soon to appeal?
Perhaps it may help avoid other appeals like this, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
I have one last question. If the creditor, let's say the interrogators come back with $7,000 being held in books, and the judge says, the debtor doesn't owe the money, does the creditor have the right to appeal at that point?
And so if the judgment creditor seeks the garnishment order and is denied, that would be a final appealable order.
At that point, it would be.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This point in time, the court will take in